philosophy. So let's start. So we'll start with the Ramban, simply because I think this is really important. Also, a few interesting points about it. One of the reasons I want to start with the Ramban is because he's not, you know, when you think of the classic Jewish philosophers, yeah, there should be passed around. Yeah, over there. Is that he's not, like, when you think of the Jewish philosophers, he's not usually chosen, right? He didn't really write systematic works of Jewish philosophy. The Ramban, or Moshe ben Nachman, right, 1194 to 1270, lived in Gerona, which was Christian Spain. Right, he's known for a lot of things, very prolific writer, wrote a running commentary on all of Shas. His methodology is greatly influenced by the toast of his revolution. He gets French and German, mostly French material, not really German, through Provence. Provence being southern France, which at the time is a different cultural milieu, but he gets toast of his material through there and really brings the toast of his methodology to Spain. His students, direct student, most famous is the Rashba, Rishon ben Haderet, who's in turn quasi-students of the Ritva, who's also a Talmud of the Ra'ah. He also is obviously a Parshan on Tanakh, writes a running commentary on all of Chumash. He also writes a series of halachic treatises. He has one on Hilchos Avelos and Sakanas Ephashos and the like called Taurus Adam. He has random drashot on different things on Rosh Hashanah. He's also deeply Kabbalistic, belongs to the main Kabbalistic school of Catalonia. Basically, in the medieval period, there are several schools of mysticism, two which would be known as Kabbalah, one in Catalonia, which is the Kabbalah which is attributed to the Ravid, to Rav Avram ben David of Poskieres. His grandson, if I remember correctly, is Rabbi Yitzchak Sagi Nahor, Isaac the Blind. The first Kabbalistic text we have is a letter from the Ramban to Isaac the Blind, complaining about people who are publicizing Kabbalah when they shouldn't. Presumably, he's referring to two different sets of people: people who are publicizing Kabbalah and don't know what they're talking about, and people who are publicizing Kabbalah and do know what they're talking about, but are publicizing what should be esoteric and is not. Specifically, two people who also live in Gerona, Ezra and Azrael of Gerona, or half a generation before him. Most of his Kabbalah was probably learned from Azrael of Gerona, also contemporary of Rabbeinu Yonah, who's a cousin of his who lives in Gerona at the same time, also known as a polemicist. And has a famous disputation with, if I'm getting the disputation correct, with a converted Jew. If I remember this disputation, I think it's Geronimo de Santa Fe. That could be the one at Tortosa in 100 years later, but I think that's right. Basically, he writes about everything, but he doesn't write a systematic philosophical work. Bo Visham, he has philosophical works, and obviously incorporated within to his Perush on Chumash, are many Kabbalistic comments and philosophical comments, but he doesn't write a systematic philosophy. Despite that, there are very important philosophical notions that emerge from many of his writings. Right, he discusses in some of his writings, you know, his ideas on Olam Haba, his ideas on on the nature of law, the nature of Torah, the nature of God, right? They come up in different places. Like I said, he was a very, very prolific writer and writes on multiple levels. So I want to do what's probably his most famous piece, or famous series of pieces, which is commonly known as his theory of Lifnei Mishuras Hadin, of going beyond the letter of the law. Okay? His theory basically appears in three places. The first place is in Parshas Kedoshim. Right? So Parshas Kedoshim opens up with a command at Kedoshim to you that you should be holy. And there's a dispute what it means. Right? For each of these, for the first piece I've given a partial translation. For the second one I've given a full translation. For the latter two, which are less central, I haven't given any translation. They're also shorter. So Kedoshim 2. So Rashi understands it have reprushim min ha'arayot u min ha'avera. Shekol makom she'ata motzei geder erva ata motzei kedusha. So Rashi just says kedoshim to you means keep the laws of araya, right? Keep the laws of incest, of adultery, the sexual laws. Avobetoras kohanim, but in the midrash halachan vayikran toras kohanim ra'izi stam prushim tihyu. It doesn't specify; it just says be prushim, be separate. V'chein shanu sham v'is kadishtem v'isem kedoshim ki kadoshani. And it says be holy, sanctify yourself and be holy because I am holy. K'shem shani kadosh kach atem tihyu kedoshim. K'shem shani parush kach atem tihyu prushim. Just like I'm holy, you should be holy, and just like I am separated, you should be separated. Lufi da'ati, and according to my opinion, ein haprishut hazo leperush lefrosh min harayot kedivrei harav. And I don't think it's only about separating from illicit sexual relationships like Rashi did. I'll have a prishut he hamuzkeret b'chol makom batalmud. Prishut is what it is everywhere else. Shavala nikra prushim, about which people who do it are called prushim. What is it? Vayinya. And this is where the translation starts. Ki haTorah hizira b'arayot uvma'achalim ha'asirim. The Torah warned us. It prescribed certain forbidden sexual practices and certain forbidden foods. V'hitira habiya ish b'ishto v'achilat abasar v'ayayin. And it permitted someone to be with his wife and eating meat and wine. Imkein yimtza baal ta'ava makom lihyot shatuf bizimat ishto nashav harapo. And therefore, one could find a way, right? Someone who is a glutton, who is a he's overcome by desire, could find a way of being promiscuous, sort of broadly speaking, with his wife or wives. Or being a glutton or a drunkard, and speak improperly, right? Speak in a low manner, right? With about sort of base things, curses and the like. Because none of these are explicitly forbidden in the Torah. And this is the famous phrase, Naval Bishur HaTorah. And then he will be, right? He will be a vile person within the confines of the Torah. Therefore, Bakatuv Achareshe Parat HaYisurim Shasaratam Lagamra. And therefore, after the Torah delineates all of its detailed prohibitions, Mitziva B'Devar Klali Shenihyeh Prushim Min HaMotarot. And therefore said we should separate ourselves from excess. Imat b'mishkal, one should not have too much sexual relations. Kenyan shamru, like the Gemara in Brachos says, shlo yihyu tamidei chachamim mitzuyin etzel neshotein kedar negolin. That scholars should not be found by their wives like roosters. Velo yishamesh elo kefi hatzarech b'kiyum hamitzvah mimenu. And they should only be with their wives as much as is necessary for the mitzvah, and you should sanctify yourself with regards to wine by minimizing it. Kemoshe kara katuv hanazir kadosh, like we call a nazir holy. And the Torah goes out of its ways to tell us stories about all the horrors of what happens when someone is drunk by Noach and Lot. What stories are referring to? Not what happens to Noach. He gets drunk right after the Mabul, his sons come in, right? He unclothes himself, he ends up being degraded, etc. Whatever exactly his son does to him. And Lot, obviously, gets drunk, and what happens? Sleeps with both of his daughters, right? Two nights in a row. You should separate yourself from impurity, even though it's not explicitly commanded. Like we say, that the clothes of a non-scholar are tame, are considered tame for those who separate from tumah. And just like a nazir is called holy for separating himself from impurities of dead people. And you should guard your mouth from eating improper things, or too eating too much rather, or speaking in a lowly fashion. And you should sanctify yourself through this until you reach to the state of separation. Like we said about Rabbi Chiya, that he never spoke anything which was unnecessary. Okay? And with regards to this and the like, we have this general mitzvah, after we delineate all the things that are actually forbidden, then we have this general one to the point where we say that this is the basis for saying that you should be clean in general. Like the Gemara derives, you should be holy. This means you should wash your hands before eating. You should be holy. These are the water afterwards. And kadosh, this is the oil you use to sort of anoint your hands after eating. Even though these are rabbinic, Ikra katuv b'chayotze b'zeh is here. Yes, here. Shenichenik yimitarim prushim me'amon b'nei adam she'im l'achalchim atzmam b'motarot b'kiyurim. The general obligation is actually biblical that you should separate yourself from excess and disgusting things. V'zeh derech and this is how the Torah generally does things. Instead of detailing everything, hold this for a second, and we'll get to the second example in a moment. Okay, so what's the Ramban's theory of mitzvah? Right, it's a lot to take in, but what does he say? Right. What does he think the mitzvah of kiddushim to you means? What does it mean to be holy?
Beyond what the halacha says.
So, right, this is how it's normally presented, right? Beyond what the halacha says. Now, it's quoted in different ways, and I want to be very careful, right? What does he say, right? So people often call it beyond the letter of the law, right? Now, if I asked you, according to this Ramban, is it telling you that in addition to the letter of the law, there's also, let's say, natural morality, or not, right? Often that's what he's quoted as saying, but I think it's
part of the halakha. Part of halakha is now, that has to be.
So what's part of the halakha, right?
Everything has to be moral. Whenever you do halakha, it has to be.
So he's saying really more than that, right? And this is why it's actually a very subtle piece, right? People often quote the Ramban as saying, "Look, what the Ramban is saying, kedushim to you, is it's not enough to keep halakha; you also have to be moral." Right? Morality defined broadly as whatever, right? Be a good person, be a refined person, etc. Right? That's not actually what he said. Right? He was actually much more specific than that. Right? What did he actually say? He said, in addition to the law, what is there? It's almost what you said, but let's just sharpen it a little bit. In addition to the law, what is there? Which is? What is Kedusha? So, in English, we would call it the spirit of the law. Now, what's the difference between saying that there's halacha and then there's morals, and saying that there's the law and then there's the spirit of the law? What's the difference? And there's a very subtle philosophical difference between the two of them. What is it?
I'm going to say forced in front of you, I'm putting you, but the other one is your choice.
Well, not necessarily, right? Morality can be binding as well, right? It can be a separate source of normative commands, right? Morality can be independently, right? Definitely the Greeks understood it that way, right? The Greeks, in fact, thought that which did not have to be commanded was even more binding, right? Natural law, which didn't need, right? This is standard Greek philosophy, right? There's natural law, which doesn't need to be commanded, and then there's, right, commanded law, right? Right, so morality can be binding. It can be even more binding. What's the big difference between saying that the Ramban said there's a commandment to follow the spirit of the law, or saying that he says there's a commandment to be moral? Not that the spirit of the law isn't moral, but what's the difference between those two formulations? Think about it carefully. Right?
The one's still in the context of halakha.
What do you mean it's in the context of halakha?
When you're doing something that's commanded, it has to be moral.
It's even more than that. It's really an epistemic question, right? How do you figure it out? For the Ramban, where does it come from? Right? How do you figure out what's moral external, like external morality, natural morality? How do you figure it out?
Based
on the. Is it defined by God or is it?
Well, how do you figure it out aesthetically? How do you figure it out?
Accepted by other people.
Yeah. Right? You use your head, right? You use the collective wisdom of mankind, right? Morality, definitely the way the Greeks understood it, natural morality, how do you figure it out? It should be directly perceptible by the human mind. That's the point. Right? You think about even modern philosophy, right? Kant. Right? Kant thinks the basis of all morality is the categorical imperative. Categorical imperative means that every action I do, I think. If everyone would do this action, would society break down or not? If it would, that tells me that even the specific action is immoral. Right? That's
isn't that just basic ethics?
Yeah, meaning like basic ethics. Right? You should be able to figure out through your mind. Right? But think what the Ramban is saying. Spirit of the law. Right? What's the difference between spirit of the law? How do you figure out the spirit of the law? What's the difference between spirit of the law and morality? You figure it out how?
You look at the law.
You look at the law. Right? It's a big difference. Right? Epistemically, there's a huge difference. Right? The only way to know it is to know the Torah. Right? Now, right? Liebtag likes describing... Have you had Rabbi Liebtag yet?
No.
Do you have him?
Yeah.
You do, right? Okay. Right? He likes describing it with a good mashal, which I think gets to the point. Right? Let's say you have a picture, a connect the dots picture. Right? You know the connected the dots things? Right? So, right, what's the chop of a connect the dots picture? Right? The person who, you know, sells the book of all the connect the dots pictures, right, that you give to your little give to your kids, right? What does he put on the page? All he puts is
dots.
Dots. Now, how do you right when does the picture emerge?
When
you connect them. Right? The Ramban is basically saying the same is true of the spirit of the law. What is Kedoshim to you? It's not an external morality. It's the connect the dots of the Torah. Right? The Torah didn't detail everything. What it did was it plotted some points. Right? Specifically 613 points. Right? Once it plotted it, right, what emerges, the picture that emerges is Kedoshim to you, is the spirit of the law. Right? But epistemically, right, the way you figure it out is by going to the Torah. I'll prove it very quickly, right? One of the things that the Ramban included, and this is much less famous, right? Some of this is famous, some of it is not. The Ramban, one of the things he included in Kedoshim Tiyu, right? Specifically, what categories did he say go into Kedoshim Tiyu, right? Spirit of the law, right? Where should you be refined? In?
Arayos.
In? Yeah, right. Eating and drinking, and how you speak. Right? Those were the three. So let's take the first one, sexuality. So if I asked you, the sexual laws in the Torah, moral or commanded? Right? Are those something you would have known without the Torah or not? So this is a dispute. The Rambam thinks that the Rambam thinks that they're moral, that you could have figured them out without the Torah. But the Ramban doesn't. You look, turn to the next page. There's a quickly the Ramban, right? This is in Bereishis. Ki tovot heina. This is in the context of the Mabul, right? Why did God become displeased with the people? So the pasuk says because the people would see Benot HaAdam, and they would see Kitovot Heina. So he says, Kamo Kitireh Chamor Sonecha, Kikra Kan Sipor Lefamecha, Kasher Hini Tovot Yichotan Lehen Lenashim Ba'ones. Right, they would take women, they would take them, married women, and they would rape them. The Shiper Gadova Hamas, and the Torah also said that there was Hamas, they would steal. Ramar Od Mikolasher Baharu, Lachnis and the Sua Lache Rimra, that they even raped married women. Fine. Avalo Hiskira Katuva Isur Bahem Beferush, Velo Nigzara Lehem Onesh Rakala Hamas, right? But the Torah didn't specify what they did wrong, right? And this is the important part. Velo Nigzara Lehem Onesh Rakala Hamas, right? The Pasuk says, for what sin was the generation of the Mabul destroyed? Or what does the pasuk say? For Hamas, right? It delineates all the sins they did. One of them was this: they were sleeping around, they were raping women, they were committing adultery, right? They were violating, in other words, arayot. But the pasuk says that they were destroyed because of Hamas. And Hashem says to Noah, I destroyed the world, ki malak al aretz Hamas. The world is filled with stealing. But if they were also violating Arayot, then why was the world, right? Why was it that the sin that pushed it over the edge was stealing? The Ramban says, Lefisha hu in yan muskal, einenu sarich la Torah. Because stealing is muskal. What's muskal? Right, you could figure it out from Seichel, meaning is natural law. Right, you could figure it out without the Torah, and Arayot you couldn't have. Now, we can argue on the Ramban. Right, we can say, no, you would have known that adultery is bad without the Torah. But the point is, the Ramban didn't think that. The Ramban thought that sexual morals were actually not objective. Rather, they are obligated by the Torah, but you couldn't have figured them out, and therefore the generation of the Mabul wasn't punished for them. Right? But if that's the case, right, now let's come back to Ramban. Right? Is it possible that Ramban is talking about objective morality, like external morality? No, because his prime example is sexual morality, which he thinks is not natural morality, is specifically mitzvot, is specifically obligated. Right? Meaning, the Ramban is not talking about natural, right? The question of whether is it morality external to the Torah is an interesting question, but it's not what the Ramban's talking about. What the Ramban is talking about is spirit of the law, specifically seeing the picture that emerges when you put together the pieces of the mitzvot. Right? So, coming back to the main Ramban, so the Ramban, Kedoshim Tiyu, yeah. You have to remind me your name each time so that I'll get it. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't get how you saw from that you're talking about the spirit of the law and not morality.
Because right, the Ramban thinks right that sexual morality is not natural morality. Right, he says that the Dor HaMabul was not punished for their sexual indiscretions because it's not an inyan muskal. Hamas is theft is right, which means right that he thinks that the sexual laws are not a function of natural morality. They're a function of law. Right? They're a function of, right, just like, let's say, well, not quite, but you know, bear with me for a minute, let's say kashrus. Right? Kashrus is clearly not a moral issue. Right? It's a legal issue. God commanded us. Right? He commanded things that are ritual. Right? That are, right, they're, and it's amoral. Right? I mean, they're not moral laws. They're not anti-moral laws. They're just not about morality. It's not what they're about. They're about ritual. Right? They're about something else. I couldn't have intuited them. So the Ramban puts sexuality, more or less, in that category. Right? The sexual laws are that. And yet he applies Kedoshim Tiyu paradigmatically to sexual laws. Right? Which means that he doesn't think that Kedoshim Tiyu is about keeping external morality, because he doesn't think the sexual laws are about external morality. He thinks that they're a function of law. Right?
Okay.
Right? Meaning he thinks very specifically, very, very carefully, that Kedoshim Tiyu is about law. Right? It's about the spirit that runs the law, right? He said, I couldn't have intuited these sexual prohibitions. But once they exist, I can put the picture together that God doesn't want me to be overly indulgent in sexuality. Right? But I couldn't, right? But it's not something I would have intuited without the law, right? Because the laws aren't intuitive. Right? But once the laws exist, a picture does emerge. Right? Now, the Ramban gives three examples. Now, what is the common thread that runs through all three? Right? Again, sexual laws, appetitive laws, right? I mean, laws having to do with the appetite, right? And speech laws, right? What's the common denominator between those three? Right? On what axis do they function? Right? What type of mitzvot are they? Yeah, right? They're mitzvah bin adam lamaka, right? So kedoshim to you for the Ramban means keep the spirit of the law in bin adam lamaka, right? Be limited, right? It's not like mean to, right, to someone's wife if they both want to be together a lot, right? And they are together a lot, that's not a violation of your marital relationship. It might be a violation of God if God wants you to be able to control your, right, sexual desires. It's not a, right, I'm not hurting anybody by overeating, right? But I am, right, making myself a glutton. Right? It runs the line between bin adam lamakom and bin adam ma'atzmo, right? But it's not interpersonal. Right? So kedoshim to you is specifically on that axis. But we'll see in a second the Ramban has a second mitzvah, Masisa Yashavatov, right? Do the what's right and good, which specifically relates to the second axis of mitzvah, which is, right? Bin adam lachavera, right? or in other words, horizontal and vertical, right? Horizontal versus vertical, or vertical or horizontal, in the order we went. So let's finish this piece, and then, right, he's going to intimate what he's going to say in the second piece. So let's finish this piece and move on, right? So again, starting this paragraph again, he said, this is how the Torah works, that it details, it has details, and then it has generalities. Ki acharei azharat pratei adinin. After it lists all the interpersonal mitzvot, namely lo tignov, lo tigzol, lo tonu, shar azarot, right? Don't steal, don't oppress. Amar bichlal v'asita yashvatov. It said more generally, do the right and the good. Sheachnis ba'aseh hayosher v'hashvaya v'kol lifnim yishur adin l'ratzot chaveru. Right? Do everything good that right go beyond the letter of the law for other people. Kasher afareish megim l'mkom over ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we will get to. And then he has a third, v'chenin b'inyan ha-shabbat, his third example, which I didn't bring, but you'll get the picture, is by Shabbat, which is asar malachot b'lav, v'yishrichim ba'aseh klali shudemar tishbot v'od afareish zeh. Right, the third one, which I didn't bring, but you can figure out what it is Shabbat, right? He says, on Shabbos, if I wanted to keep the letter of the law. So in the Torah, the letter of the law is, what do you have to do? Well, not do, right? 39 malachos and all their derivatives, right? But as we know, if there was no rabbinic law, so you could, right? I mean, think about all the things you know from Shabbos, right? Well, let's try it that way. Right? When you think of Shabbos, what do you think about? Right? What makes Shabbos unique for the rest of the week?
Sleep.
Good point. Yeah. Right? Like, what don't you do? Right? If I ask you, right, the first thing, right, the most important thing, what don't you do on Shabbos? Electricity. Yeah, derabanan. What else? Work. Right? Business. Derabanan. All of it. Derabanan. Right? Right? All of that is derabanan. Right? It's a gzera that you might write, right? All of it comes from that. Muksa, dirabana, right? Well, I mean, yeah. Right? A lot of the things that make Shabbos Shabbos, right? Why do you get to sleep? You get to sleep because you're not at work. Midaraisa, that's not true. You could go to work, right? The Ramban said that's not really true. It's just that those aren't obligated. Right, the limiting you by all the 39 malachos, by all the creative acts. So, what does that tell you? That Shabbos should be a day of rest. So, yes, there are rabbinic laws that actually prohibit us from going to work and the like. But the notion that Shabbos should be a day when we don't work is biblical. It's just not mandated. It's not law. It's not the letter of the law. It's the spirit of the law. Right. So, he has three examples. Right. One. As a general mitzvah of Bin Adam L'Chavira, one specifically in the realm of Shabbos, and the third, Bin Adam L'Chavira.
Why don't your abundance make up part of the letter of the law?
I mean, they make up the letter of the law for us now, but this is an important point in general, that sometimes, right, rabbinic laws aren't about the Torah law, or they are, but they're not about enhancing the Torah law, they're about protecting it, right? You know, like a gzera, right, in order to make sure that you don't violate the Torah, so we have a rabbinic law. Sometimes you're right that what the rabbinic law is it takes what was implicit in the Torah as a value and concretizes it into law, meaning it takes the spirit of the law and it makes it the letter of the law. For example, right, the Rambam in Perek Yudalet Halacha Aleph of Hilchos Avel says that Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim. And bring some other examples, are midirabana, the rabbinic commandments, but they're bichlal, the de'oraisa of a haftal reicha kamocha. Right? Because on a biblical level, so any act of kindness is equal. Right? If I'm being kind, that's v'haftal reicha kamocha. On the rabbinic level, we took certain elements of being kind and transformed them from just the spirit of the law into concrete, right, rabbinic obligations. Right, sometimes we do that, right, where right something is actually a value on a biblical level, but we just, right, the point of the Derabanan is not to create a new category, but to, right, to instantiate the biblical value in law.
So according to the Rambam,
the Rabbanans are in fact Kadoshim to you.
Yes. Oh, not all of them, but obviously some of them. Okay. Yeah.
So the ones that are enhancing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. For the Ramban, right, it opens that up, right? And for example, right, the Ramban seems to explicitly say in one of the places that Muktza is a kiyum in Zachor, right? That the notion of Muktza, right, the notion that it's, right, taking the spirit of the law from the Isra to carry, right? Because what does the Isra to carry accomplish? That I can't waste, the way the Ramban says, I can't waste my day by carrying my furniture around the house. Right? It's not technically, right? Meaning, Mukta accomplishes that, right? I can't move things for no reason, right? I can't move, you know, my car keys around for no reason, right? There's no Isra, but obviously if I, right? So he said carrying, why is carrying us, sir? Because it forces you to not just do sort of pointless activities. It's not really creative. So then the Rabbanan took that, right, the notion of that, and they expanded to Muktzah. They made a whole bunch of things you're not allowed to carry and touch. Well, not touch, move, right? Because it makes you sit and do, right, and rest, right? If I could carry things, right? And the Ramban says explicitly that's what Muktzah is, right? Muktzah is, yes, rabbinic, but it's an expression of Tisha B'Av. Right? It's an expression of the Daraisa value, right? He's actually, if I remember correctly, the most explicit formulation of this is in his Drasha the Rosh Hashanah. Okay.
But then you also get the spirit of the rabbinic law as well.
Yeah. And though the question of the spirit of the rabbinic law, right, is the spirit of the rabbinic law just channeling the biblical law, which for him it might be. Right? Okay. The next example, which the Ramban intimated to, is the example from Min Adam La Chaveira, which is Vasisa Yashvato, right? So that's the next example, right? Do the right and the good. Al Derech HaPshat. What does it mean? Yomar Tishmur Mitzvot Hashem Yiduzav V'chu Kotav V'chavim Vasisa Yashvato HaTov V'yashar V'inav Bilvat. What it means is, you know, do the good. L'man Yitav Lach Haftacha. That's a promise. Yomar Tishmur Mitzvot HaTov V'inav Yitav Lach. If you do what's good in the eyes of God, it'll be good for you. Ki Hashem Meitiv LaTovim V'yasharim B'libotam. Because God is good to those who are good. R'atinu B'zeh Midrash Yafet. And the rabbis, Darshan, just followed in a very nice way. Amru zu psharav lifnei mishur hadin. It's compromise and going on the letter of the law. Right? Originally it said, keep the mitzvot. V'atayomar. And now it says, gam v'asher lo sivcha. Also that with which you were not commanded. Tein da'atcha l'asad hatov v'yashar v'inav. Do that which is good. Ki hu ohev hatov v'yashar. Because he loves the good and the right. V'zen yan gadol. And this is a great thing. Right now he's even more explicit than Kedoshim to you. Why is it that the Torah commanded this, the spirit of the law? Right? Why didn't we just have a laundry list of everything you're supposed to do? Right? Right? And he said, because that's not how things work. Right? The Torah is not going to mention everything you're supposed to do in Shchinav, Yeriav, Cholmaso, Matano, Bitkunei, Yeshuv, Aminyut, Kulam. What? The Torah is just going to list every little thing you're supposed to do with your neighbors and your friends and business and society. That doesn't make sense. Aval Harashi, Sker, Mehem, Arbe. So what did you do? After mention a bunch of them. Kagam, Lotelech Rachil, right? Don't be a tailbearer. Lotikam, Lotitor, don't take revenge. Don't bear a grudge. Lotamon, Odam, Reyacha, right? Don't stand idly by when your friend is dying. Lotikalal Cherish, don't curse a deaf man. Sevatakum, stand for an elderly. Chayotseban, etc. Chazar Lomar, there are calls. Yazat, Ovi Yashar, Bechol Davar. It came back and said, do what's good. Examples, compromise, and go beyond the letter of the law. And this is again coming to your example, right, of a rabbinic law which expresses it. So there's a law called Dina de Bar Metra, which means that if I sell a field, I have to give first dibs to the person who has an adjacent field. And I have to offer it to him first for full money, but I have to at least give him the option to buy it, right, before I go to an outside buyer. That's called Dina de Bar Metra. Right? And the Gemara grounds it in Vasisa Yashar V'Tov, do what's right and good. Right? So it's a rabbinic command which expresses a Torah value, right? Because that's just a nice thing to do. Right? V'afilu mashamru, pirkonev, edibaro benachal emabriot, ad shi yigre b'chol inyan, tam v'yasha. Right? So, the Ramban, in three places, right, has this general idea that the Torah doesn't want to, has no interest in making a laundry list of laws. What the Torah tries to do is to paint a picture of what you're supposed to do, right? It plots the points. But it expects you to look into the Torah and understand the values that connect the laws, right, that permeate the system, And those are, in fact, obligatory on a biblical level, right? They're not the letter of the law, but they're the spirit of the law, and they, in fact, have independent obligations, right? One is Kedoshim Tiyu, right? Which tells you, right? You take the, you know, the examples he gives. Take the sexual laws, and it teaches you, right? Limit yourself, right? Sexually. The appetitive laws, don't be a glutton, right? The laws about speech means be refined in how you speak. Then, Shabbos, a much more local one, where the Malachos tell you it's not supposed to be a creative day. Good, so make it a day of rest. The third one is in the case of interpersonal laws, right? The Torah tells you don't be a talebearer, don't steal, don't kill, don't, etc. And you should know, be nice, right? Now, sometimes we go farther than that, and the rabbis actually create rabbinic chiyuvim that express that, like Dina de Bar Mitzvah, like Bikur Cholim, like Muktza, right? But the idea, and this really is important because it, right? And what's really important with the Ramban, in addition to the notion that he creates the spirit of law, is he gives you a different perspective on rabbinic law, right? It's not that there's biblical law and there's rabbinic law, right? For the Ramban, often rabbinic law is simply a way of concretizing the values that are implicit in the system, meaning they are at some level biblical, right? Which is a very important idea, meaning it's not coming from nowhere. Now, there is actually sort of a offhanded comment in the context of drinking that the Ramban said that's actually important, right? He said, by drinking, right, how do you know that you're not supposed to be a glutton? So one is the laws, on the appetitive laws, but the second thing is that it tells you, right? It tells you the story of Noach and Lot. So the Ramban actually tells you a second thing. The spirit of the law comes from two places. One is from the line which connects the laws, and the other place is from narrative. Right? Noach and Lot. Right? That the stories are there for a reason also. Right? The stories help paint the picture, right? They point in a direction. Right? Now the Ramban mentions this idea in yet one more place. And that's in the context of Ben Sora Mora. I'm not going to get into the whole theory that emerges from it, but this is the last piece. Don't read inside, I'll just tell you what he says outside. But, right, the Ben Sora Mora, right, this 13-year-old kid who's killed, right, because he stole a certain amount of meat from his father and a certain amount of wine, became, right, drunk, and he was a glutton and a drunkard, and his parents said he won't listen to us, and then we end up killing him. We stone him to death, right? So Ramban says, well, what's going on, right? What did he do wrong, right? So the Ramban says, well, he didn't violate the letter of the law, but he did violate Kedoshim Tiyu, right? Being a glutton or a drunkard is a violation of Kedoshim Tiyu. He says other things. He also violates Kibbut Av Em, and he violates Uvos Tidba, Uvos Bukun, right? Clinging to God, but at some level, meaning he violated the spirit of the law. Well, no, he didn't, right? He ate permitted meat, right, and permitted wine. Well, yeah. So he didn't really, right? He just, right, it's right, what he says is actually he violated Maklea Vivimo, right? The degrading your parents, which is not actually a prohibition, it's a klala. Right? It's one of the cases where the Torah says cursed to someone who degrades his parents. Right? He didn't necessarily like, right, Kibbut Av Em is very formal also, right? What fits in Kibbut Av Em is very formal. He may not have actually violated that. Maybe he did, but that's not the point, right? What he did was he degraded them, which is more of an, right, arur, you're cursed if you do that. But there's no formal prohibition, according to Moses. There's a shita, and there's a tshuva, and it's siv, and meshav davar. It doesn't understand what I just said, but different story. And there's a little malbim, but whatever.
According to that, does that mean that Kedoshim Tiyu is a separate mitzvah?
Yes, he thinks it's a formal. Yes, he thinks it's a formal mitzvah. He thinks it's a formal mitzvah. Yeah, I mean, an informal mitzvah, but a mitzvah. Yes. Now, the Ben Sora Mora example is interesting. I'll tell you on one, like I'll regal achas what I think the Ramban is saying there. The Ben Sora Mora is one of the four places in the Torah where the Torah says the reason you kill the person is because Uman Yishmu V'Yirov V'Lo Yisifonod, primarily to educate other people, right? So again, I have this theory more worked out for another time, but I think basically what the Ramban is getting at is that the reason that you kill Ben Sora Mora is because, as we've seen for the Ramban, Kedoshim Tiyu is not just a law. What is it? It's at some level the fundamental of the Torah, right? The notion that the Torah is not a laundry list of laws, but rather there is a spirit that permeates it. There's a goal that the Torah is supposed to bring you to, That's central for him to the Torah. If someone violates that, and in theory we were going to kill somebody for that, what does that teach people? What does that teach the nation? This, right? It teaches them, if we're willing to kill for something which is not a formal violation of the law, it's just a violation of Kedoshim to you, what does it tell you? It tells you that the whole point of all those laws is this. And if you miss this, you've missed everything. Now, the Gemara says that Ben Sarah Mora never happened. Right? But the Gemara then says, right, well, if it never happened, then why is it even taught? Why does it exist? So the Gemara says, Drosh v'kabal schar, so that you should learn about it, you should expound it, and get reward. So some people just understand that as saying, look, it was there because there have to be some mitzvah that the only value is to learn Torah about them. Right? But I've argued before, and then I saw that Rabbi Rabinovitz, Rosh Yeshiva Ma'ala Dumim, said the same thing, that it could be that Drosh v'kabal schar, right, expound and get reward, is just the Torah, well, no, is the Torah version of L'man Yishmu V'yiro, right? Meaning, the Torah tells you that if this were implemented, it would be implemented to educate people. But it's never going to happen. So then why was it written? No, to educate you about, right? Meaning, we were willing to kill, we would be willing to kill somebody over a violation of Kedoshim Tiyu to educate the people. It'll never happen. So why was it written? Drosh V'kabal schar, to learn about it. But what do you learn when you read the Parsha of Ben Sarah Mora? That Kedoshim Tiyu is not just a value, but the notion that there's a spirit of the law and that the point of all the narratives and all the details of the law is to go to a certain goal, that's central. And in theory, if it would ever happen that we had a 13-year-old that epitomized the violation of Kedoshim Tiyu, we would be willing to kill him. It would never happen. But we would be willing to, right?
But I thought the point of Ben Sarah Mora was more kill him now before
he does. Again, I don't want to get into it. The Gemara says Nergal Shem Sofo. The Ramban ends up combining what I just said with Nergal Shem Sofo. I think, because according to the Ramban, he thinks that it's inevitable that if you don't understand the spirit of the law, you'll end up violating the letter, and that's what's happening, and that's part of the story. I have this here online. You can find it somewhere, but right, not for now. You're right. That's what the Gemara says. I think for the Ramban, they're connected in a subtle way. But yes, he does say that. Yeah.
But that means that Ramban wouldn't hold that Kedoshim Tiyu to be in Shrine.
Well, that's
not the law, it's the law itself.
So, well, that's an interesting question, right? Well, first of all, what does Lefinim Meshurat HaDin mean, by the way? Well, no, actually, right? It's not. Let's translate the words. That's how it's normally translated, but it's not, right? Within the law, right? Right? It's actually the opposite, right? Lefinim Meshurat HaDin means, right? If you imagine it, right? Right? It's like saying this, right? This is law, right? This is what I'm entitled to by law, right? Right? Lefinim Meshurat HaDin is, I'm here, these are my rights, right? The proper thing to do is?
Stay in.
Is not to execute my rights, right? Is to be willing to give up. Right? Right? It's not actually going beyond the letter of the law, right? What he's saying is, right, Vasisha Rosh Hashanah specifically, right, it's telling you, these in theory are your rights, right? But we're telling you, don't, right, we're not telling you what to do. We're not telling you what exactly to do, right? We're not telling you how to compromise, right, and how not to, right? We're just telling you, don't go all the way here, right? Don't enforce what you could enforce. Don't go that far, right? Stay here, right? Be matun, be patient, right? Be calm, right? Be willing to forgive, right? So we're not telling you what to do. We're just telling you the limits of what you can't do, right? You can't, right? It's, right? When you think about it this way, it makes more sense, right? It's not go beyond the letter of the law. It's, the law is here, and then there's another law that says go here. No, this is the outskirts of what you could, in theory, demand in court. Right? And we're telling you, don't do that. Right? You shouldn't do that. Right? But we're not telling you what to do. We're telling you what not to do. We're telling you, in some way, sanctify yourself. Right? We're not telling you exactly how. Just in some way, right? Don't insist on getting everything you could. Right? Okay. So, to summarize, right? And, right, I like using this as an example. Right? The Ramban, not a systematic philosopher. Just write a work of systematic philosophy. Right? Right, you take the pieces together, it's actually a very powerful philosophical idea. Which is that the point of the Torah, right, the essence of Torah law and Torah narrative, Right? The goal and the essence of it is not to keep all the laws, just to keep all the laws, but rather you're supposed to keep all the laws, and that's supposed to lead you to a greater value that emerges when you take everything together. Right? And for him, he thinks there's three mitzvot that epitomize that idea. One is Kedoshim Tiyu, that tells you in the realm of Beinam L'Makom, a more narrow one in Shabbaton, in the context of Shabbos, and a third one, Beinam L'Machavero. Specifically, again, now, he's specifically talking about the spirit of the law. Whether he thinks there's a natural morality and the spirit of the law in some way accords with it is an open question, but that's not what he thinks these are. He thinks specifically they're creating a picture that emerges from the law and from the narrative of Torah. And for the Ramban, right, that's what's clear in the Ben Saramora case, right? That's really fundamental, right? We're willing to go to great lengths to make sure that people understand how central that notion is to living a Torah life. Okay, so that's al regel achas, that I think is one of the most important philosophical ideas in the Ramban.